When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Let's listen to Scott Boras right now. So Juan Soto, obviously a free agent. Free agency opened a couple days ago. It'll probably take a while till he lands anywhere. Now, here's an answer from Scott Boras about what Juan Soto brings to the table. He obviously brings a lot. I will tell you this. I think Scott Boras' presentation initially is way over the top. But he then does get to a pretty convincing point of Juan Soto being a great player and how he can help an organization, particularly financially. Here is Scott Boras.
When Scott, you say he brings millions to the franchise, what are the revenue streams that you're considering?
Well, I think the fact that when you have something that no one else has in the player community, in the talent arena, you have the jewel, you have the Mona Lisa of the museum, you have the attraction. You also have somebody that allows for owners to win repeatedly. And when owners win repeatedly, their revenues skyrocket. They develop the impact of postseason play on attendance, on rights in the streaming world, what those rights may mean. All of those things are going to generate that. Plus the international branding of being the one of the greats, and yet he has literally 15 years more of his prime to offer.
I'll tell you this, man. He's over the top, but he's pretty convincing with some of that stuff.
Yeah.
Mona Lisa.
His player is that good that he can start making comparisons. But, man, when you go directly to the top of Mona Lisa and everything,
right?
It's effective. It's effective, and it's evocative, and he really is that good. If I'm an owner, I'm thinking, man, this can put me into that upper echelon no matter what.
Well, here's the only
player.
Yeah, here's the only thing
it's
I think.
Secret sauce.
Here's the main thing I think he missed about what an owner, if they sign a guy like Juan Soto, and you get all those playoff appearances and all that, the owner becomes more liked in the community.
Yeah.
Because you're just.
Totally.
And for a billionaire who's going to be a billionaire whether he gives Juan Soto $500 million or not, that's meaningful. Now, whether that makes them give an extra $100 million, I don't know. But it's
you're the anonymous owner.
What are the chances?
that's right.
What are the chances that we can actually get?
Oh, I think about a 20% chance to get.
You think it's that high?
I think it might be higher.
Okay,
John.
Good.
Middleton's not messing around.
I agree with you, and I feel strongly that it's possible. I just don't know what that number looks
Problem
like.
Problem is Yankees and Mets have deep pockets as well. Yeah. All right, let's talk some Eagles football. Big game on Sunday. Of course, the Eagles and the Dallas Cowboys. It's 94 WIP HD1 Philadelphia as we broadcast today away from the Tasty Cake Studio. We're at our home base every Friday, which is the beautiful Borgata in Atlantic City. And Dick Vermeil joins us every Friday at this time, brought to us by Independence Blue Cross. The region's strongest network of doctors and hospitals means you can choose where, when, and how you get the care you need. Learn more at IBX.com. It was the Eagles' choice back in the mid-1970s who to hire. They wanted to choose the right person to get it right and ultimately to try to pass the Dallas Cowboys, which is what Dick Vermeil and his 1980 Eagles did. Coach Vermeil, an honor to talk to you on an Eagles-Cowboys week. Good morning, sir.
Good morning to you guys.
You know,
Hi,
Dick,
Coach.
There's never a time we don't enjoy talking to you, but there's probably never a time we enjoy talking to you more than Dallas week, which I typically refer to Dallas week as the home game here, but, you know, we get two of these. So, Dick, before we get to the present day, can you take our audience, and perhaps particularly our younger audience, back into what you walked into, what the challenge was with Dallas, who had been perennially great, and how ultimately you tracked them down and accomplished the 1980 thing?
Well, I think, you know, Dallas, because of Tom Landry and the management staff there, Gil Brandt, who's in the Hall of Fame, the ownership, everything there was a very, very solid, maybe the number one, two, or three franchise year in and year out in the National Football League. And we come into Philadelphia, my staff and I, and you know, been losing for a long time, and we didn't have any draft choices. So we, you know, said, and I said to myself, there's no way that I'm going to ever outsmart Tom Landry and the rest of these great coaches, but maybe we could find a way to outwork them, you know, and that's what we attempted to do. And we changed how we practiced in the NFL to more like spring practices in college football. We coached every individual player we had as long as we could keep them on the field and as hard as we could work them. And gradually we got better. But, you know, I was with Reggie Wilkes the other night. He was our highest pick our first 3 years there, and he was a third-round pick our third year, and fortunately he paid off. But it was, you know, it was easier in the old days because you could control how much work you thought your team needed. Now you can't do
that.
Sure,
no question.
A disadvantage, yes.
You know, Dick, I heard you say something one time, and I'm wondering if you can elaborate. I know you really respected Dallas for the organization they were and their excellence, but it annoyed you that I heard you say one time they would strut. You know, a lot of what we would call cocky, arrogant, stuff like that, that they would strut. How irritating was that for you with them as a competitor that had that thing about them and, frankly, have continued to have many decades later?
Well, sometimes as a coach, you interpret that as disrespect for your team, okay? And if you remember, back and then, they were self-appointed America's team. You know, they never gave me a vote. And they never gave the rest a league a vote, but they were more or less given that credit, and that it developed an intense rivalry, or helped us, because we didn't want to be looked down upon. You know, and it's all right to be not as good, but that doesn't mean you can't work harder and catch up somewhere down the road, as long as you know, you're fortunate and have great coaches, and then you give them time to coach, you know.
No question. Dick Vermeil with us right now. All right, Coach, let's talk about the present-day squad and the coach and the playing of the game. So Sirianni is obviously very aggressive. In this aggressive era, he's even more aggressive than most. Do you think he needs to dial it back at times? Some of these fourth-down decisions, when you watch the game, do you say, oh, I don't like this one? Do you think he's been too aggressive?
You remember the last time I coached the game was January 1st, 2000. Okay, so that's a long time ago. But, you know, I'm more old-fashioned. You know, I take the points, the fourth down gambling and these kinds of things. You know, two-point success this year is 31%, down from 55% last year.
Wow.
Since 19, got me going way back, the average is 47.5. So, you know, I always felt it's all right to gamble if it only affects you negatively if you lose. But when you gamble as a head coach and it doesn't work, you affect your entire organization. That's a lot of responsibility. That's more than gambling. That's risk-taking. And I just, you know, it doesn't make me right and another coach wrong. Hey, they did it last night. Thursday night football, people do it. Mm-hmm. But that's just not who I am. I'm too conservative thinking that way.
Coach, I wonder, I think it's really interesting. You said your last year as a head coach was 2006. I think that the iPhones ended up coming out in 2007-ish. And Nick Sirianni talks a lot about how he FaceTimes his guys. I'm wondering, you're such an interconnected guy, you know, a guy that the players would really relate to, I would think. How would FaceTiming work for you as a coach? Would that be a tool that would be beneficial, or is that something that you didn't use it then, you wouldn't use it now?
Yeah, and put another way, Coach, a lot of coaches also lead through some fear. And would that work? Would fear still be on the table if that level of friendliness is on the table?
Well, I think fear is a good motivator. No one wants to fail. And everybody sort of fears being disciplined in regard to failure or being part of failure. But me, in the old days, we put the game plan in, and I would get it over to Jaworski, and I would call him like 10 o'clock on Wednesday night and just sort of review it with him. But there was, like you said, there was no FaceTime. And me, in the old days, especially here in Philadelphia, when you're running your own offense and coaching your own quarterbacks, in meetings and then, running the practice in the organization. I didn't have time to FaceTime anybody, let alone Carol, for time's sake. So it's just a different era now. Plus, we had 10 assistant coaches, and that was three more than anybody else in the league had. Now you got 25 coaches. So yeah. The head coach has more time. But I'll tell you, he's got two coaches that are doing an unbelievable job. This Jeff Stoutland with that offensive line, take that left tackle. Not drafted left tackle, now playing like a starter. Take Vic Fangio, what he's done with the defense and the addition of these new kids, it's just outstanding. And that's what you need for a head coach to look really good, okay? I know that's what I needed.
Yes. So what is going wrong with the tush push? We failed repeatedly in this last game. It's something we depended on so heavily. Suddenly it didn't work. What went wrong, Coach?
Remember, defensive coaches are getting paid well, too, okay?
That's true.
I'm not a big fan of the play because, we all talk about, keeping your head up in football. When you look at that play, half the players have their head down, bent under. So I'm not a big fan of it, but it was successful, and it'll be successful again. But you got to give defensive people credit, there's nothing wrong with giving Barkley the ball on fourth and one.
I agree. Yeah. I love that idea.
So, Coach, let me ask you this about Saquon. He is on pace for close to 400 touches this season, and that's the regular season. If they have to play four playoff games to win the Super Bowl, that could be another 100 touches in the playoffs. This might be close to a 500-touch season. I think it's too much. I look at the way he was getting up last week and say, I know it's tempting to give the ball to Saquon, but I think they got to start dialing it back a little bit. Are you worried that they're leaning too much on him and that you'll get diminishing returns later this year?
No, personally, I think it's about time they lean on him as much as they do, okay? Maybe not 30 times a game, but a guy of that ability, he can win the game for you on any one play. And, there aren't many of Barkley's in the National Football League, okay, of his ability. And with our offensive line and the way they can play and how well they're coached, the running game is 46% of our total offense.
Okay? Wow.
And that's because of game planning. That's because of personnel drafted properly, signed properly, and coached excellently. And you got to take advantage of your strengths. You can't hold yourself back because you're worried about getting hurt. I can remember standing on the sideline calling plays, and I see Wilbert Montgomery standing next to me on the field. I say, something? I'm not nearly as smart as I was when he was in the game.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Coach, did you have a number in mind with, Marshall Faulk? A guy who was that versatile. Did you feel like you needed to protect him with a number? Was the ideal number for Marshall Faulk 20 combined touches between the catches and the runs, or what did that look like in your mind?
I really didn't. Maybe I wasn't structured early enough in my career to think that way, but my attitude was always put the ball in your best player's hands. And if you don't, you aren't going to win the big, tough games. You aren't going to Super Bowl. When Wilbert wasn't a running back, if you'll remember, especially as he got going, we lined him out a lot as a wide receiver. In the Super Bowl, he was our leading wide receiver, that we got beat in. And that hurt me because that we didn't have him running the ball. I can't do two things at the same time. But, no, I think you've got to keep your best players on the field. Now, if you're going to play a team that's not very good and you're better – and you're playing well, then I think you can temper the carries.
Sure.
I never tempered it in practice for them. I always felt the more they're going to play, the harder they have to work to be able to play more.
And you guys were tackling
it's a whole different philosophy.
Yeah,
I'm not saying I'm right. I'm not saying I'm right. Okay.
Bergie would tackle him to the ground. Those were more touches back in the day. All right, Dick, how about a prediction for this one? The Eagles and the Cowboys, a game that I believe if the Eagles win can almost end Dallas' season. I mean, this is a very important game for the Cowboys. They're in deep trouble. What do you got here this weekend?
Well, they are a poor football team, okay? Both offensively and defensively right now, they're a poor football team. And you have to be careful of assuming they're a poor football team when you go play them, because many times teams come up with the upset You know, they come up with the upset. They're more apt to get an upset playing a good team when they play them at home and you're not a good team. And you've got to be careful of that. You just cannot take for granted anybody in this league. And remember, the kid that's going to start a quarterback, he was 3-1 on a winning record last year. But this football team is an injured football team, and they're not a good football team in any phase of the game. My computer says we're going to win by 15. I kind of doubt it'll be that much. I think we'll beat them. We're a better football team.
Yeah, no question.
Disciplined, structured football. Our profile right now, remember I've said to you guys, there's only two ways you move a football. Run the football and throw a completed pass. Right now, our offense and defense has a 12-play game advantage over our opponents, meaning we're running 12 more plays a game than our opponents are running successfully. That's why we're winning. And if we can keep that ratio, we're going to be in the thick of it.
Love it. Hey, Coach, let me say this, and perhaps I don't say it enough. Thank you. And I don't mean just for jumping on today's program. This Eagles-Cowboys thing, it's a totally different level than it would have been if you hadn't come through Philadelphia for the years
you
were the coach. You made it so much more, and I want to thank you because that's meaningful for us as Philadelphia sports fans.
Well, thank you. But you remember who really made it. Jaworski, Berkey, Carmichael, Sizemore, Frank LeMaster, Randy Logan, these guys, they are the guys that made it, okay, not me.
Love it. Coach, stay well. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you, Dick. Oh, by the way, let me remind everyone, Dick Vermeil's tremendous wine is available right now. And, of course, as we get really very close to the holiday season, if you live in Pennsylvania or New Jersey, get yourself some delicious Vermeil wine shipped directly to your home. Visit VermeilWines.com, VermeilWines.com for Coach's entire wine selection. Thank you, Coach.
Thank you.
You got it. All right, the legendary Dick Vermeil. On this Football Friday, Eagles and the Cowboys. In 2 days, Twitter poll question not involving the Dallas Cowboys, though. Involves a different squad. Twitter poll brought to us by Armin Chevrolet. Check out Armin's selection of quality one-owner pre-owned vehicles at ArminChevy.com. That's ArminChevy.com. Together, let's drive. The question, which team's going to win the NFC East this season? Will it be the Eagles or the Commanders? We don't even put Dallas in this poll. We certainly don't put the Giants in this poll. Who wins the division? You can vote at Sports Radio WIP on Twitter. Let me tell you who might not win a playoff spot. And yesterday is the first time it really dawned on me. It is possible, and that's the 76ers. So the Tyrese Maxey news from yesterday that the hamstring injury is significant enough that he's going to miss, you know, an extended period of time. It sounds like at least multiple weeks. I mean, is that a month and a
you
half?
You have to be conservative with him.
Of course you do.
With a hamstring.
It's a hamstring, yeah.
It's all about burst in
so
his game.
They're already, James, what are they, 1-6?
One and six, yes.
All right. So we were already thinking maybe Joel plays half the games this year. Maybe. I mean, we know that when they had only Maxey and no one else, they couldn't win. Now it's going to be some games of Paul George and no one else. At some point soon, it'll be Joel and Paul George. But how often does Joel choose to play? Do they amend the strategy? I don't know the answer to these questions. Here's what I know. The idea of the Sixers, who typically win 50 to 55 games, missing the playoffs, to me, would be freaking ludicrous with Joel Embiid, Tyrese Maxey, and Paul George. This is the kind of thing 4 weeks ago we would never even have conceived.
Playing together.
No. You're right, playing together. Like, never would have conceived it. Now,
will they
John,
be together anytime before Christmas?
Well, I don't know.
No,
I
mean, that's the question.
Yeah.
If you had to bet. Would our big three play together?
I'll say yes.
Before
I'll
Christmas?
Say no.
Maxey probably comes back during
the Tyrese Maxey thing. Oh well, if Tyrese comes back himself,
I understand.
Before Christmas,
is Joel injured again?
Will Joel be?
Well, I get it.
It just puts
it.
A lot of pressure on the Embiid games. Like they have to win 75 or 80% of the time when he plays. Yeah. Like they have to.
They really do.
But
like,
they do.
They do.
75-80% is like best record in basketball.
Yeah, that's
but they do win.
Like, you know, they win a lot.
That
clip they
win,
probably win like 70%
well,
or 68 or something
here's,
like that.
Here's
I'm
what
saying it's got to be better.
When he played last year in the regular season, they were 32-8.
Okay, so yeah, that's right around that clip.
Yeah, that's 80%. But that's a lot more than they typically are.
Yeah, I think historically it hasn't been that
Of course
great.
Not, because that's a 60-win pace. James, did you think yesterday when you heard the news, they might miss the playoffs?
Of course. Yeah, I absolutely did. Now, I wouldn't bet on them to miss the playoffs.
Yeah.
I would still bet on them to make the playoffs. But, yeah, I absolutely thought about it. Like, again, I said it before. The phrase that comes to mind is season from hell. Like, sometimes good teams or teams that are expected to be good, like, things just go wrong, and you have this injury and that, and you lose this game you should win and whatever, and then all of a sudden, you're in such a deep hole you can't climb out of it. That happens.
Well,
it
and does. That's the crazy thing that I feel the Embiid, you know, fiasco and all the injuries have distracted from, that these role players were supposed to be improved, and they're clearly not yet. I mean, maybe they can improve and mesh, but right now it's just not working. And it's concerning because clearly Embiid isn't going to play that many games. Paul George and Tyrese Maxey now. Like, what do you have at the end of the day?
Well, and that puts even, you're right, because that puts even more pressure on a guy like Paul George.
Right.
At his age, like, if anybody other than Joel deserves a little bit of, like, all right, let's try to play him 27 minutes instead of 37 minutes. You know, let's pick our spots, maybe the occasional day off. Like, Paul George is going to have to put in some freaking work.
And he's what, 34 or something, 33?
Take that pressure off the stars.
And that's where Andre Drummond's supposed to play better than this.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe it's not in there.
Horrendous.
This is karma for doing the things that you do with that team. I'm just telling you. You know, this whole lying about Joel's availability before the season. And then just everything that's happened since. No, it's been a train wreck.
I get it. All right, let's go to the phones. 215-592.
I have a question for after this call.
Well,
an important question.
Ask the question. Go ahead.
This is...
All right.
Oh, I'll ask after.
Okay, you got it. Let's talk to Jim in Bridesboro. A lot today about our hatred of the Dallas Cowboys. What's going on, Jim?
You know it, baby.
You hate them?
Good morning, best show ever. Oh, God. Are you kidding? So I love that Dick Vermeil was just on, because that's like when I grew up with the
Eagles. He started it. He started the purposeful hatred of the Dallas Cowboys organization in a focused and productive way.
Well, here's productive, I think, is the case. So, Jim, he took it up to another level, but he's the first guy to punch back. Like, I'm obviously way too young to know about what was going on in the 60s, but I know stuff was going on, hatred existed, but the Eagles weren't good enough to win. Vermeil's the first person.
Yeah, the Eagles were terrible in the 70s.
Vermeil made them capable of actually making it competitive and ultimately tipped toward the Eagles.
But Timmy Brown was a star in 67.
No, clearly.
And they broke his jaw and broke his teeth.
That's right.
When I started watching football, right, the Eagles might be leading in the fourth quarter. And the sense of dread when Roger Staubach came on the field. I mean, he's a great guy by all accounts, right?
I know. Yep.
But when you're 10, you don't know that.
Yeah.
Okay? And when he came on that field, I was like, I hate this guy. And then they were the first team to use the shotgun, and they only really used it, like, when they were losing in the fourth quarter, it seemed like, anyway. And then Roger would step back, he'd get that ball, and it was over.
Well,
and
Jim,
Jim,
here to me, and again, I'm too young to know it in real time back then, but looking back, to me, the most irritating thing has got to be that freaking thing their offensive linemen would do.
Oh,
they would go down, up, and down.
Yep. The hitch.
Yep.
But you know what?
That was
cool. And little kid,
it wasn't.
Little kid football. All of the little kids.
I bet you all did it.
Offensive linemen
wanted to do it. Philadelphia.
Look, I wasn't on the offensive line. I didn't want to do it, but I know my offensive linemen all wanted to do it.
Well, I wasn't even alive, and that thing irritated me. Yeah. Jim, give me a great answer. A volatile character. Who do you have?
Flex defense. Sergeant Barnes, Tom Berenger's character in Platoon.
Oh, that's a good answer.
It's a really good answer, yeah.
Yeah, I like that answer a lot. Let's talk to Gary right now, calling from Vineland, New Jersey. Hi, Gary.
If I never hear Cartme again, I'm okay with it.
What's that? I don't even know what that is.
The guy was saying Cartme for the person that's golfing with you.
And I didn't like
partner. Yeah, that was weird.
So. Yeah, I never heard that before.
No. Great job breaking 100.
Thanks, buddy. Thank you.
You really mean it?
How'd you do on the back nine?
Oh, look at this funny guy.
Wow.
So the answer, your horse is high, and he is 51 with a 46 on the front nine.
I had a buddy of mine.
Why can't you maintain?
It's hard.
I had a lot of sixes on the back nine, which didn't kill
me.
Because I'm not that good.
Are you physically tired at that point?
No,
is that part of it?
It's just hard to golf, man.
I started playing a little bit more conservative. I got a little nervous that I could blow it, and I started having a lot of sixes. I would lay up. I was trying to avoid sand traps.
Tight booty.
I would say tight booty is a fair way to frame it.
For the first time in forever.
All right, what do you got on this game and this rivalry? Gary, go ahead, man.
Did you see the end of the game last night? That's what worries me about Sunday, is that we're not just going to take the points when we should just take the points. And the refs.
Don't you think Nick will probably do something? He'll do something more conventional.
Well, the Bengals should have gone for the win. I mean, but they got screwed on that call. There were two penalties that weren't called.
There was three.
There was a third? I missed a third?
There was Gesicki. There was the guy he threw the ball to, and then they hit his helmet. Like, when can you hit a quarterback's helmet and not get a penalty?
Well, I remember when Trent Cole touched, and I mean touched, not hit, touched Peyton Manning's helmet in 2010, and it almost cost the Eagles a game. And that was such a garbage call by the league.
Yeah, you would think Burrows would get that call.
Yeah.
But they got no calls on that last one. And you want, I mean, we talked about it with the Bucks the other day. You on the road, you want to go for the win there.
Yeah, no, often you do. All right, Gary, give me a great answer here, man, for a volatile character.
Say hello to my little friend.
Yo.
Wow.
Yo.
Wow. So
that's nice a impression. Big answer.
Yeah, and he's not a mass murderer. He does kill.
No,
but he's
yeah,
not a mass
but, yeah,
murderer.
No, he's volatile. He's like of a quick twitch.
Yeah,
definitely volatile.
I like that. All right, let's listen to Jaws. So we had Jaws on the program earlier this week. You know, we were talking to Dick Vermeil, and we have talked a few times this week about the usage of Saquon. I think it's too much. Vermeil doesn't. Jaws, I guess him and his old coach will have to talk on the phone before Sunday.
Because, FaceTime.
Yeah, FaceTime. Because they disagree. Here's Jaws this week on the Saquon thing.
Are you worried they may be overusing him?
Absolutely. I think it's really a fine line. And, you know, you want to see, you know, he's playing unbelievable football. He's having just a spectacular year. But, again, I think we have to look at where this team potentially could end up. They're starting to play really good football on both sides of football. So I think you can say, hey, okay, we can start thinking playoffs. We can start thinking Super Bowl. All those thoughts can come into our mind. Now you put him on a pitch count. Do you want him to get 20 carries a game? Do you want him to catch two passes a game, three passes a game? But the game dictates how that goes. And if you're ahead, like a couple weeks ago, you know, he didn't go back in the game when he probably could have had 250 yards in the game. But I think you need to keep him on a pitch count because you need him healthy when he goes to the playoffs.
So here's why I totally agree with Jaws even more than I thought a week ago. Because a week ago, I thought the same thing. But last game, John, it's the first time I thought five or six times we saw Saquon get up looking beat up.
I thought there were a number of players.
Right, James?
I thought there were a number of players.
Yeah, kept getting up slow, and I was like,
it wasn't just Saquon. It was Jalen.
No, but I care about, I care about those two.
It was Fred. It was.
I don't care about Fred. I care about Jalen and Saquon.
Poor Fred.
Fred.
I don't know. It looked like it was starting to catch up with him.
It
and
did.
We know that it was an early bye. We know that we needed that early bye. But we don't have late bye for when guys get banged up.
Yeah.
That might be something that that catches up and bites us in the butt. Because we are I don't want to worry about injuries. I think you over worry about injuries. I think it is pointless. I think that is something you cannot you cannot control past a certain point, and they have controlled it to that point. So good job on that front. Keep it going. I expect that they'll continue to. This week might be one of the few that we see them pull back a little bit on Saquon for preservation purposes.
Well, with another game in 4 days, I mean, I think it would be malpractice
because of this Thursday. Because of the Thursday night game, you have to factor it in. You know that they are. Even though you don't want to look ahead, those doctors and athletic trainers, it's their job to look ahead.
I mean, I'll just put it this way, and I'll go worst-case scenario, which some would say best-case scenario because you give the ball to him a lot. If he were to touch the ball 25 times in both games, and after being beat up, have 50 touches in a four-day span, like that's not – come on. Let's go to Ken and Cinnaminson right now. Ken, what's happening, pal?
Good morning, friends. How are you today?
Doing great, Ken.
Hey, WIP listeners are everywhere. We were in Aruba all week last week, and we just happened to randomly run into Christine from Schwenksville, who is a morning show caller, and her brother is your dentist, Joe. So,
brother is my dentist, so she's the brother of Dr. Wolfinger?
Sister.
Sister. Well, sorry.
Wow.
Dr. Plow, he said.
Oh, Dr. Plow. Yeah, with Dr. Wolfinger.
Yes.
Sure. Okay, good deal.
So, so my hatred of the Cowboys goes back longer than all of yours because everything about me goes back longer than all of you guys. The thing that I found most annoying, frankly, was not so much the Cowboys, but the old CBS NFL Today with Brent Musburger and Irv Cross and Jimmy the Greek and Phyllis George. Phyllis George was the most annoying Dallas Cowboys fan to ever walk the face of the earth, because even she could not go a week without talking about the Dallas Cowboys.
Well, and it was so influential, and everybody, like, now people are spread out, Ken, with what they watch, but back then, that's what everybody watched every Sunday.
Right, and the thing that put me over the top, she did this feature on beautiful Harvey Martin, and I can still see the look on her face and hear her saying, beautiful Harvey Martin, and it made me want to choke her. And I was like 10. So okay. It's okay. But but people who aren't old enough to remember, they weren't around for that defeat of the Cowboys in the NFC Championship game in January of 1981.
Yeah.
It's hard to appreciate just how cathartic that felt for all of us Eagles fans who go back to the white helmets with the green wings,
right,
and just some of the worst football you could imagine seeing on your television every Sunday.
Sure, sure.
And it was so cathartic, and it's still, to me, one of the happiest memories I have as an Eagles fan.
That's a really fascinating call. Give me an answer here for a volatile character. You can win the Boots and his tickets for the fight tomorrow night.
I'm going for a different kind of volatile, and I'm going to go for Frank Costanza.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I think that's fair.
For sure.
Yeah, it's not what you'd call a temper. It's more what
he does. You're like, yo, the serenity now and all that stuff, you know?
Unpredictable, the volatility.
Yeah.
But it's there.
I think it's a pretty good answer.
It's a really good answer.
He'll erupt every once in a while.
No, for sure. No,
would Kramer be more volatile?
No.
Not as angry, I guess.
No, because, Kramer's just weirder.
Yeah, just strange. Yeah.
And his physical humor, but I wouldn't call that.
It's not usually like he gets angry or whatever. Yeah.
All right. So I used to be really angry at Scott Boras, and I always will be because of the J.D. Drew nonsense. But he represents Juan Soto. He's already helped deliver.
I think I'm permanently angry at Scott Boras because of how much money he
welcome to our world.
Yeah, I want to know how he has a monopoly on baseball.
Is he a billionaire?
He's got to be.
No.
I've never seen him on a list.
I would guess he is. I'll check.
He has dibs on everyone's money in baseball.
James, what percent? Let's say a guy 10%. Signs for James. Let's say $500 million. So what would he get of that?
It's 10% historically,
ads are different.
Sure,
contracts, you have a smaller percentage.
That's
the
my point.
Ads, he could get a bigger chunk, up to 10%.
Yeah. But these baseball players don't typically have ads that get them more than the contract in baseball. Like, I know the way it works in real estate. The higher the house, oftentimes the lower the commission. So
look at you with deep real estate commission knowledge.
Well, it's true.
How do you know this?
Because I'm an expert, man. In life.
How?
Well, you're
how
not an expert.
An expert.
I think someone you know is
Amy
an expert.
Amy from Villanova may or may not be a real estate agent in the Villanova area. Okay, she may or may not be.
So you've heard this. You've picked up some information osmotically.
Well, it makes sense.
Just by being around someone who's smart.
You do the same work for $1 million home that you do for a $400,000 home. But, you know, I can understand the owner saying, I'm going to cut you a little less just because my home's $1 million and someone else's $400,000. I'm going to give you 2% instead of 3%. That kind of makes some sense.
I don't think that's how I can see talent baseball agents work.
Well, here's what I know. If I'm Juan Soto, I'm not giving Scott Boras the same percentage as I would give him when I was making $5 million. I just wouldn't. I'd say, if you want to represent me, I'm cutting your percent.
Well,
I would. That's what I would say.
Well, of course you should. The problem, Joe, is these players forget that these agents represent them. Like, the agents work for them. As a rep,
well,
I was a
do.
Player rep for our union as a NFL. And you had to remind guys these agents are employed by the player.
Well, there's no question. You know who? I don't know if you guys remember this. I think it was Ray Allen. I could have the wrong guy, but I know multiple NBA players have done this. If you're a max NBA player, there's a max you can make. There's nothing to negotiate other than picking a team. there are some players that have completely cut out an agent.
Well, didn't Joel did not that. Have one for a while before
yeah.
he got one?
Harden did that. I think Kawhi might have done that at one point.
If you're going to give me a certain number in a certain years, I don't need an agent to negotiate that. It is what it is.
Yeah.
Jimmy Butler, anyway, maybe?
And you're saving a lot of money.
Especially, yeah, money.
Especially if the team you're playing for is Florida or,
well, what, that's a whole
or Texas or one of these states that doesn't have a state tax on
top of that. The numbers are 4% on playing contract, 25-30 on endorsement.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's from a
that's a lot of money.
All right, let's get to what Scott Boras said yesterday about Juan Soto's mindset. Now, I'll say there's something that he's talking about that's very important to him. And when you hear this answer, I think you'll think very favorably about it as it relates to John Middleton. I mean, Boras, of course, ain't messing around with Soto's mindset. He shouldn't. And Middleton is an example of this. Let's listen to Scott Boras.
Juan Soto wants ownership that he knows is going to support an opportunity to win annually. And he has, it's remarkable to think of a player from a very modest beginning, you know, from the Dominican Republic, that all the monetary offerings that he's received, record offers consistently, that his focus was always was, I want to know who my owner is, I want to know that we're going to be able to win, and I want to know that besides me, there's going to be a great number of support on the part of the owner, that he has the same desire to win that I do, and that I'm going to commit my career to it, and I want the owner to commit his resources to it. And that's really why Juan Soto became a free agent.
Got to tell you, Scott Boras is smooth, guys.
He really is, man. Yeah. He really is. Yeah. There's a reason he's Scott Boras.
He's really smooth. Let's go to the phone.
Real quick on that specific thing. It looks like it's $450 million is what it says on the internet. But with that audio right there, I mean, John Middleton, to your point, it feels like that's John Middleton and Steve Cohen. You know, it feels like if that's the truth, the Yankees are boxed out of it. We'll see.
And the reason is what on
that case? Hal Steinbrenner's cheap, man. He is super cheap for someone who's the owner of the Yankees. I mean, we've all seen that clip where they're like talking to him and he's like trying to calculate the money in real time. Like,
okay.
I think if we're going to take that audio at face value, John Middleton and Steve Cohen are the type of owners he's talking about.
Great.
Yeah, I like that.
That's great. So, Jimmy, in your mind, is that number greater than 20%? The chances that we would sign Juan Soto?
No, I'm like 15-20 still. I'm somewhere in that general range too. But
all right, okay.
Yeah, I think the Mets are the favorite. If I had to bet on a team to get Soto, I would bet on the Mets.
That's so disgusting. Please stop.
If he goes to the Mets, I'll be inconsolable. Yeah. That would be like I'd rather him just stay with the Yankees.
Can you imagine those Mets fans? We're talking about the Dallas Cowboys and everything that comes along with that.
Yeah,
the Mets fans are impossible to handle. Like, they're awful, distasteful people. Can you imagine?
Yes, they are. John.
You imagine Juan Soto on top of that?
Listen, we're either going to love him or we're going to hate him. It's one or the other.
Yeah.
Hey, our hatred of the Dallas Cowboys is clear. By the way, Diddy and Shield, two people we never hate, both had interesting, although somewhat conflicting, things to say about Jalen Hurts this week. What they said, we'll get to that shortly. Our hatred of the Dallas Cowboys. Let's get to Dan in Williamstown right now. Dan, what's up, buddy?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hi, Dan.
Hey, I want to start off by saying real quick about the Sixers. You know, every year it just seems like it's a problem with this team, whether it's a player or a coach or a GM or ownership. Every year the Sixers just are a problem. It's an issue.
Well, and, correct. And multiple problems normally. I mean, Dan, they haven't even had a new Joel injury this year, so to speak. I mean, that's almost inevitable at some point. See, that's the other reason why they might miss the playoffs. We're factoring this in like, all right, if he plays 40 games or 30 games.
We don't know that.
No, we don't know that. He could get out there in game 7 and have an issue and miss the next month and a half or 2 months. Like, it's not good, Dan.
It's not, and it's every single year. It's always like a player. We draft players that are hurt, they sit out, and then they come here, they're hurt through their whole career, and then we switch to coaches. It's just one thing after another with them.
Yep.
My second thing I want to say is about, we're beating up on Nick Sirianni all week about, you know, how he contributes to the team or whatnot. You know, we're lucky we're not Zach Taylor last night went for that two-point conversion at the end of the game.
they could have tied the game in their overtime and hoped for the best.
I agree with going for the win there on the road.
Oh, I don't agree with that at all. It's crazy. And especially with the position they're in and the division and the way that their record is, I wouldn't have went for that two-pointer right there. We're lucky it's not Sirianni doing that. If Sirianni did that, he probably would have got his head cut off. But and I wanted to say that. I mean, we blame a lot on Sirianni, but I think Sirianni with time, I think we could blame on the coach with the time of possession, timeouts, challenges, stuff like that. I think we could blame on the coach.
Well, some of that you can. Look, I think some people have overreacted to his decisions, but he has made some really bad ones this year. I'm not sugarcoating it. No, I get it. But I also don't think he gets enough credit when he gets it right. I mean, there was literally a 4th-and-3 a couple weeks ago. They threw a touchdown pass. The calls praising him compared to the calls criticizing him on basically a similar thing.
People don't overly really like him, Joe.
No, they don't. But my point is, let's be balanced in the... evaluation.
How do you know that he made that call on 4th?
No, he made the decision to go for it.
Okay.
That's the call we know he made. Likely, Dan, give me a great answer, a volatile character.
Well, I say Michael Douglas's character in the movie Falling Down.
Oh, that's a win.
That is a winning answer right there.
That's great.
And, you know, that caller made another good point, and I wasn't thinking about that because, like, I wanted the Bucks to go for it the other night, and I said, you know, I'm going to keep... He's kind of right about the Bengals. What are they, 4-5? So what if they had managed to force a tie? It helps them, right?
I thought they should have kicked the field goal. I get that you're on the road and the Ravens are the better team, and generally you go
extra
for
point.
Two.
Yeah.
That's what I meant. I thought they should have kicked the extra point in that spot.
Well, here's what I'll...
I like going for it on the road, but he's right about where they are in the standings. That's a valid point.
Here's what I'll say to all that. Not patting myself on the back.
Oh, boy.
I was hanging out with Ryan Howard and Chase Utley and Jameer Nelson
last night.
Big deal.
All right, Howard Eskin, keep talking.
Right. Name dropper.
I don't watch no stinking Bengals-Ravens game. Come on.
It's a great game, man.
No, I heard that.
It was a wild game.
John, when am I going to get you to these events?
I don't know.
People ask for you all the time.
Don't have them on a Thursday.
Really Where's Richie?
I was at...
All the time.
I was at the Harrington... girls volleyball banquet where my daughter won the coach's award last year.
Congratulations.
She was also the Central League she was also on the Central League All-Star team.
Good.
She's
family
really good.
Of athletes.
Yeah.
All right, John, so congrats on it. Let me ask you this. Can I get you to the Otho Davis dinner? It's in about 2 weeks. I don't have the exact date. So Nick Foles,
I guess if I don't have volleyball and
Nick Foles is being honored.
That would be amazing. I went to the Otho Davis
dinner. Let's make some noise. Come on.
One time at some point when we were doing the show.
Yeah, okay. I think I was there that time you went, John. I remember that.
I really do. If I am able to, I will.
You should go,
try
man.
To be there. It's just like I don't normally have windows like that.
James, tell me if you can figure out what's going to be a feature in this banquet coming up in about 2 weeks. Foles will be there. Corey Clement will be there. Trey Burton will be there.
No way.
And I think Jason may be there.
Trey's still playing, right?
Oh, I think Trey's done. Trey Burton's been
done.
Or
is he somewhere, like, as a coach? I saw him somewhere.
I think he's done. But, no, that's Jim Gardner's going to be honored that night also. So, yeah, if you get a chance, Otho Davis.
That's a great night. That's a great list.
Yeah, they do a great job raising money to the athletic training world and scholarships for the up-and-comers, you know.
Otho's on the Hall of Fame thing too this year, right?
Yeah. He is, which is really cool. All right, let's get to some audio here of Ray Didinger and Sheil Kapadia. So, I thought Jalen played really well the other day. I was extremely encouraged, and that was clearly prevailing sentiment. However, some different opinions from two of our most notable guests we love having on the show, Ray Didinger and Sheil Kapadia, with the evaluation of Jalen. So let's start with Ray. We had him on the show, as we do every Monday, 7:55. He joins us for about 15 minutes to evaluate the game. And when he did, he talked about Jalen Hurts. What'd you make of his performance, Ray?
Oh, it was really good. It was just 4 straight games. With a quarterback rating over 119. It's the first time in the history of the franchise anybody's done that.
That sounds outstanding.
So he's playing really good football. Yeah, and you know, the bottom line on him is, of course, 4 straight games without turning the ball over. If he can just keep playing that way with the players they have on this offense, they're going to be a very, very hard team to stop.
So a good starting point there from Ray, and I think that would mesh with the way a lot of us were thinking, you know, based on what we saw from Jalen. Here's more of Ray.
One of my takeaways from this game is just how good Hurts looks compared to the guy we saw at the end of last year. I mean, it's just to me, it's a stark difference. I mean, he now is moving and running and making plays with his legs more than he has, more than he did last year. I mean, he looks now to me, in terms of that kind of stuff, he looks like he did 2 years ago.
All right, so great. I mean, and I agree, he clearly looks more athletically spry. The thing is, when we talked to Shiel Kapadia on Wednesday, and by the time we have Shiel on the program, he's had a chance to review the film and really dissect it and give you an evaluation based on the All-22. So Shiel gave an answer that surprised me. It's more in line with what I've been thinking about Jalen in prior weeks when I was concerned about Jalen. And Shiel's not saying he didn't play well, but he's certainly saying he didn't play as good as a lot of people think. Here's Shiel the other day on Hurts.
Hurts, how much better in the last couple games does he look to you than the first couple? And how far, how much are you convinced that he's back or near back?
No, you know, I didn't think this game was as good as the Bengals game, kind of as close to as good as the Bengals game. I thought there were some ups and downs in this game. He's still throwing the ball downfield with great accuracy. I think the biggest issue with Jalen Hurts right now is kind of trusting it. When it's there, pulling the trigger, cutting it loose, and making the play that's kind of supposed to be there. You know, there are examples in this game where he's just turning down throws that I think most quarterbacks, I don't know if I should say most quarterbacks, the good quarterbacks in the NFL that Jalen Hurts is, you would expect them to kind of make those throws and not hold on to the football or go elsewhere with the football. So I think teams are going to continue to ask the Eagles, hey, are you willing to throw the football to the middle of the field? We're going to put safeties on the outside over your wide receivers. And is Jalen Hurts willing to make those throws? I think that's the big question with him here going forward.
So that turning down throws line was an interesting one because it resonates with me with what has frustrated me at many twists and turns this year. And sometimes it's because I don't think he sees it. And sometimes I think he sees it but doesn't pull the trigger. Shiel continued as we got deeper on that.
Because, Shiel, I do know, I mean, the one thing I did know for sure, he was late on the 4th-and-3 throw to AJ. If he throws that earlier and times it up better, that's an easy completion and a conversion. And then less criticism of Sirianni. He waited way too long to throw that one.
It's a great example, and that specifically, like, those are the kinds of things you're seeing maybe five, six times throughout the course of a game. Then I think if he gets those things cleaned up, then the offense could be really interesting.
We'll see. I mean, we'll see what he's got coming up on Sunday.
It is clean-upable, which is the great part of all of this.
No, I understand.
It's so close, and we're seeing it get better. Week by week, we are seeing an improvement. The biggest part of the improvement is after the bye, the turnovers stopped. That's where it started. That's where the improved play began. But now you're seeing there's just a more familiarity. You know, everything that Jalen is required to do, he can do it with less thinking, more just action.
Well, look, he's deeper into the season and he's deeper into this offense, and that's good. I'm just struck by, I think most of us, if not like all of us, thought he played better in this last game than he had at any point this year. And what Shiel, who had reviewed the tape, is saying is that's just not true. Now, Shiel could be wrong. I'm not saying he couldn't be wrong, but, you know, I do trust his evaluation after he's gone through that.
I think you need to bear in mind that he has been playing well in more than just this last game. That Jalen has been doing the right thing with the pull reads. Well, really going back to
second half of the Giants game on. He was lousy up until the second half.
He wasn't lousy. He was doing a lot of things well. Mm. It wasn't flashy. It wasn't as obvious. He's to the point now where some of the flashy stuff is truly incredible. Like some of these throws that he's making.
Well, the deep ball is beautiful.
Are incredible.
Great deep ball.
But then the very pedestrian things, the simple things that we have overlooked in the past, we should not overlook those also. He's making great decisions in terms of what play to get us into, where to get the protection. He's doing so much more than we give him credit, and now it's very smooth the way he's operating.